Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
What would you call sitting at home and listening to a live performance that you can't attend in person? Streaming, maybe? This is a performance of Mozart's The Magic Flute. And here is a more contemporary example from John Adams' opera, The Death of Klinghoffer. Did you know that in 1880, two inventors in the U.S. and Britain used opera as the original inspiration for electronic streaming? They ran telephone lines into their private homes to listen to opera. But then they wondered about what might fill the silence when the opera stage was dark or during intermission. And talking about the news, newscasting was born. Actually, it was just reading the newspapers into a microphone. Opera has been an inspiration for lots of technological applications for centuries. Opera itself is the original multi-platform, multimedia spectacle. Opera was a natural for the early movies. Silent flicks suddenly became talkies or singies. An opera soundtrack is synchronized with a silent movie. Here, opera singer George Mendel in 1907 is singing La Marseillaise on screen and in a recording. Opera is a living, innovating, changing artistic tradition. It's not a dead art form for snobs. Mark Shubin is media engineer and opera historian at the Metropolitan Opera in New York. He says the spirit of innovation in opera is alive and well.
Electronic home entertainment, consumer headphones, movies were all invented for opera, and things like newscasts and sportscasts weren't invented for opera, but they were created through the auspices of opera or the funding of opera, right down to modern media, digital audio, and into the future, neutrino communications and quantum entanglement are all being considered for opera.
How was opera a laboratory for special effects in the very early days?
One opera house that was built in 1766 or opened in 1766, that's 10 years before the Declaration of Independence in the United States, and it still exists today. It's called the Drottningholm Slottstheater. It's outside of Stockholm, and the stage machinery that's there is just extraordinary. They have elevators. They have ocean wave machines, thunder machines, wind machines, all kinds of stuff, and that was in the 18th century.
The early days of broadcast and the early days of electronic transmission really was devoted to figuring out ways of having more people experience opera.
Yeah. People talk about the first radio station being KDKA in Pittsburgh, but that was in 1920, and 10 years before that, operas were transmitted from the Metropolitan Opera House on radio. And 3 years before that, there was a gigantic 200-ton synthesizer that made opera music and broadcast it, and it was so early in the days of wireless transmission that it interfered with the Navy, and the Navy came to stop the opera music transmission. But then the Navy decided that opera music was actually very useful to them to test their radio facilities, and they used to do the Anvil Chorus from Il Trovatore to test the capacity of their transmitters and see if the meters would match the anvil sound.
When anyone decides, say, World Series time, to log on to the Major League Baseball site and, you know, maybe not pay for the stream of the actual game, but decides to watch that representation of the game taking place on screen, they owe a debt to opera's ability to do the very same thing generations ago on stage, when people would go to games and watch the game being essentially depicted on stage.
Yeah, that's correct. Starting in 1885 at the Grand Opera House in Augusta, Georgia, and then the Grand Opera House in Nashville, people would come to the Opera House and watch live remote games, there would be a telegraph operator at the game, and he would telegraph the plays to a telegraph operator in the opera house, and that person would read the plays, and then a third person would move some sort of indicator around on a board so people could tell where the players were and what was going on. And then both the choreography and the technology advanced very quickly. So by 1886 in Detroit, we have reports of what it was like in the opera house, and it was like being at the ballpark. The person would say, and it's a high fly ball, and it's out to Dalrymple.
Will opera continue to maintain this innovative mode, and can it buck the notion that young people have that opera is somehow a snooty art form that doesn't, you know, work with, you know, cinema and, you know, YouTube right now?
I think so. There are major opera companies around the world, including the Metropolitan Opera, that are doing streaming, that are transmitting their operas to movie theaters. And then we have situations like a small opera company in New York called On Sight Opera that last year did Rameau's Pygmalion. And they had the titles, the translations available via Google Glass. So if you wore Google Glass, you had the translations projected into your eye, and wherever you looked and they performed all over a space, you would see the appropriate titles. Was at an opera conference in 2013 in Denmark, where there were laboratories from around the world that were talking about neutrino communications to eliminate the delay when you have, say, a singer who's performing in Beijing and a singer who's performing in San Francisco, and they're doing a duet together, even at the speed of light. That's too fast to get around the curvature of the Earth. So neutrino communications would speed that up. But maybe even that's not fast enough. And that's why there was this discussion of quantum entanglement, communications using quantum particles that are married and then brought to separate locations. And whatever you do to one happens to the other.
Brought together from separate locations, married and then separated. It sounds like an opera libretto right there. And there's something John Adams might actually write, Quantum Entanglement, the opera.
It's possible.
All right, Mark Shubin, media engineer and opera historian at the Metropolitan Opera House. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
And keep innovating.
I'll try.